What's up, fam?
And unmuted. You what will is not silence us. We're here never to talk cannabis with my very good friend, the American action figure, Mr. Elliot Lane.
Way to bring that back around, Javi. Ooh. You beat me to it. You're feeling the energy today. That's what I like. This is a fun episode because, honestly, our new segment should be popping, absolutely popping today. I mean, for multiple reasons, but we have some stock news to talk about. And then after that, we get to talk with an expert, I think, on the legal side and legislative side, with Sarah Gullickson is making a return to our podcast. Very excited to chat with her again. And we're going to talk to a senior executive from probably, I would assume, the largest private cannabis operator in the U.S., right? I mean, can I say that? Is it the largest? I mean, we'll ask him.
I mean, that's what they say.
Hey, that's what they say. I see you not making those claims.
I think it is.
I think it is too. I don't know. Jeremy, we'll find out. We'll get you up here soon to find out. But first, Javier, man, I want to entitle our podcast something to do with the news today. It should be Cronos Group sends Canopy Growth a gift basket for taking its stock along with the ride. I want you to explain what happened with Canopy Growth, but I'm just going to say and start off with Cronos Group, CRON on the NASDAQ. SEC charges him with accounting fraud, and it completely doesn't matter at all today because of this massive news from Canopy.
Indeed. I mean, so what happened with Cronos is they were charged with this accounting fraud, but they settled. Apparently, they reported the misconduct to the SEC upon finding it and then cooperated with the commission's investigation. They took some remedial action, but it was quite the ordeal, right? Basically, they charged the former chief commercial officer, William Hilson, with fraudinating and abetting the company's violations. They improperly accounted for millions of dollars of revenue as well as other accounting misconducts over multiple reporting periods. The stock in question is CRON, Cron, not to confuse it with C, like Cron, like the chronic, which is with an H, and that is always up. As you said, after a very bad day, Cronos is up today about 6% last I checked. I think the reason
that 6.5%.
But I think everything suggests that maybe a little bit of the surge on Cronos is related to the stock rebounding from its lows from yesterday. But most of it is a sympathy move. Canopy Growth Corporation, CGC, announced plans to conquer the U.S. cannabis market. They will create a new company called Canopy USA LLC and hold all of the company's U.S. investments, which will enable it to exercise rights to acquire Acreage, Wana, and Yeti, or Jetty extracts. And there's also something on TerrAscend.
Yes, they own 13.7% of TerrAscend. But before we leave Cronos Group entirely, are you in agreement with the SEC in not levying any fines against them? You don't have to actually answer that. I feel like I'm putting you on the spot there. Let me say this. If I were an investor in that company, I would feel pretty pissed.
I mean, a settlement still implies some kind of penalty. It's good and bad for the industry, right? We do want accountability, but we also do want some of the largest companies succeeding to prove the model. So I don't know. It's conflicting interests. And I'm not a lawyer, right? I'm sure, again, if they settled, they did it through legal and abiding to all the regulations of the SEC. I'm sure the SEC is in no way being lenient with a marijuana company.
Right. So a lot to dive in actually on this Canopy news. Do you want to start, or, you know, I want to at least bring up the Jeffries note, but you first. So Jeffries responds by saying, since Canopy did this, there's no reason that MSOs can't do the same. Put their assets into holding companies and then become investable on a U.S. listed exchange in an entity that is not directly plant touching. Now, you would think that somebody would have explored this 5 years ago. But I mean, Javier, does that sound legal to you? Does that sound like we're going to see a snowball effect here? Or is this something that Canopy has put a lot of work into?
I think so. I mean, honestly, first off, Jefferies analysts are much smarter than I am. So if they say that this could have favorable implications in regards to MSO uplistings, this could be the case. And it sounds pretty reasonable to me, right? You know, could these MSOs put these assets into a holding company under a parent company with ownership via non-voting shares? And that is key in all this, right? To understand how it is structured, right? These structures are complex, but if there's someone who knows how to navigate these kinds of complexities and intricacies of capital markets, it's Americans.
There was an undertone in there, Javi.
That is America for you. Yeah. Whether you like it or not, like Delta ATAC, right? It's like,
fair. Oh, good God. Stop it. Stop it right now. There was an undertone in there, my Argentinian brethren. But with that being said, honestly, CGC has done something here. I will say, you know, and obviously we see this all the time with these Canadian companies getting bumps in their stock because of something that's not really directly affecting them. But yep. For those that actually own THC, marijuana assets, in the U.S., of all the assets that are moving, of all the stocks that are moving right now, it's really just Canopy. And then for me, I'd probably understand Tilray with their MedMen investment, their option there. But Aurora, Sundial, Kronos, I mean, am I missing something there?
You know, what's interesting about this move, and even in relation to Canopy, right, is it doesn't seem to change the situation at all. They just moved the option to purchase to an LLC in the U.S., right? But they're not saying, okay, we're moving forward with the acquisitions. I imagine that the fact that Canopy Growth Corporation listed on the New York Stock Exchange would not directly own these American companies that deal in THC might allow the American LLC to acquire these companies. But this is not something they said.
Are you sure? I thought the whole point of Canopy USA was to enact on the options.
If that is the case, it would be awesome.
I thought that's the entire reason when that becomes so. Canopy and Canopy USA collectively become a top five revenue generating cannabis company in North America. That was in their release. That's what the PR stated this morning. So they would have to enact on those options to claim that revenue, right?
Yeah, it seems so. And here I'm going into the details a little bit deeper. And for instance, for Acreage, the initial ownership would be 70%. They wouldn't acquire the entirety. And then, you know, they would acquire the rest later. It's an interesting move. Interesting move, and I'm sure they studied it a lot.
And keep in mind, the other Canopy, not Canopy USA, but the other Canopy still has BioSteel. They still have all these other assets that aren't the marijuana side in the U.S. And of course, they divested their Canadian retail. But nobody really cares anymore.
That's all of our news time on.
I know, but worth it. This is a huge. This could snowball into a lot when it comes to the markets, and that's what our audience, our investors, right? That being said, Javier, do a lightning round, man. I'm sorry that we took up so much time.
A Russian court upheld Brittany Griner's sentence on drug smuggling charges, clearing the way for her to serve a 9-year sentence sentence of 9 years in what they call a penal colony, basically prison. And what they're saying is, or what people are speculating with is, this is another move on behalf of Russia to pressure the U.S. government to negotiate a deal for her release, right? A prisoner swap. This is what Russia has very openly wanted since day one, right? They want a couple Russian prisoners to be released in America in exchange for Brittany Griner. They know they have a good bargaining chip here. So even before before the appeal started today, all analysts were saying, hey, don't expect any miracles. And then, you know, you have the U.S. government saying this is a sham, right? National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan called the decision another sham judicial proceeding today. President Biden has very clearly stated that Brittany Griner should be released immediately, as if that meant anything to the Russian government. Meanwhile, the White House continues to face other, you know, headwinds and criticism from the cannabis community. This time, protesters are urging Biden to actually enact his pardons and release these cannabis prisoners that he promised to release and hasn't released.
Now, I didn't read the story there, but maybe this might be something you can help explain, or we can all just go read on Benzinga.com/cannabis, like awesome bit supporters of Benzinga and Javier. But isn't it signed? Isn't this, it, aren't the federal prisoners that are possession, not dealing, that are possession oriented, isn't it happening?
I mean, they're not releasing the prisoners just yet, right?
Imagine there's bureaucracy here.
Exactly. I'm not sure if this just takes some time. I would have thought that this would take, I mean, I didn't expect prisoners to be released the next day, right? Even though they should, because every day in prison is hell. You know,
yeah,
but it's,
right, man. Not that I have personal experience, but I can't imagine. With that being said, give us a couple more, and then we're going to move on to our first interview with Sarah to get her reaction on a few items that have happened recently and what we can expect in November.
Perfect. Yeah, let's do it. I mean, you should go after this show to Benzinga.com/cannabis to find out more about all these items I'm going to tell you about. First off, go to Benzinga.com/cannabis and check out Trevor Noah's reaction to cannabis weed being sold in Florida gas stations and Circle K's. And then there's a very interesting guide from Marijuana Policy Project on how different governors or gubernatorial candidates stand or where they stand in relation to cannabis. So Benzinga.com/cannabis for the show to check out all of the details.
That's very interesting. I'm going to go read that ASAP. All right, Aaron Thomas, let's bring over our good friend, founder and CEO of CB Advisors, Sarah Gullickson. Welcome back, Sarah. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, we're good. We're good. We're hanging in there. It's been a busy month in cannabis. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot to unpack here, but if you want to just give us a really quick, like 10 second recap about who you are, just as a reminder to our audience.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been in the cannabis industry 13 years. We do license acquisition. So that's either by way of application or potential purchase. We do operations. I have my own licenses. So to sum it up, I'm a cannabis entrepreneur.
Love that. So I want to dive in first because you have unique expertise with what's happening on state levels, right? So I'd like to understand with the states that you've worked in, I think Illinois, some in the Midwest, some in the Southwest, what's the initial feel for you from Biden's executive action? What are you seeing, if anything, from the state level? Are you seeing governors latch on to this? Are you seeing inaction and, just kind of letting it go? I'm curious, just an initial reaction from you.
You know, I haven't been following that as closely just because it doesn't really affect that many people. I think that I saw in the headlines that they were planning on doing something soon in Florida. And of course, we're like going to celebrate many milestones in the industry. But in my opinion, I think a lot more could have been done, especially after being in office this long. And so, we need, as the cannabis businesses and, obviously the federal government still taking tax dollars from us, there's certain things that I think that the businesses need as well. Not that I'm like holding my breath on it, but I'm a little critical of like the big news story that this happened and everybody getting excited about it, just because it really doesn't affect that many people. I think it's kind of similar to the GTI and Circle K headlines, where it's in a
big
media. But yeah, no, I mean, I think that, you know, when we see something that's going to be more impactful, not only for the business people, but, you know, the people that are affected by this, you know, we'll follow it a bit closer.
Let's talk licenses a little bit. And I have a tough question to start with. You said you have your own licenses, but you also help people get licenses. You've been helping people get licenses for years, actually. You've gotten dozens of licenses for people or helped them get the licenses. Now, how do you manage the potential conflict of interest of helping a potential competitor get a license?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, transparency, right? So if there's dozens of licenses available, or, you know, then we can compete. If it's not region specific, I would never put our clients in that situation. Or sometimes what happens is, you know, for example, in Alabama, we are representing dispensary client. At this moment, we're not representing a vertical. We're entertaining a couple. And I saw the numbers for the processor when they first came out. And I have great local contacts, meaning like the residency requirements for the 51%. I have great investors. I have great operators. And so sometimes I'll see the void and put a project for myself together. But we definitely err on the side of caution. We would never put, you know, a dispensary group together while we were already competing. And then, you know, we have such a good track record of success and we have great experience to lend to the application. So sometimes clients would rather take a discount in fee for service to give us a bit of equity. So all the projects kind of take their own shape. But if it's like a lottery, you know, in this region, like I would never put a ball in for myself and a client.
Very cool. So what's the... Actually, two questions. I'll start with this one. How are you prioritizing the states where you yourself are shooting for licenses? Like, what's the differentiating factor for you? What do you look for in a market?
You know, the dispensary licenses, for me, I feel like I'm of the most service in the sense that I have, you know, standard operating procedures. I've designed, you know, a million of these. We have a marketing background or marketing and advertising background. We have people that do graphic design, web development. And so dispensaries are really a slam dunk for us. Just because we can really leverage our experience to like not only win them the license, but also open the facility for them. So they're not having to hire like more grow consultants. And then I really have a sweet spot for processing. I like our processing facilities to be kind of like a think tank for different groups to bring their products in. My Ohio facility just got approval to operate on Monday after like a very long time and pandemic. Great. All the things. And so we have one group that's going to be managing that facility. And then we have the opportunity to find other products with like-minded business, you know, values and put them in the same space, but not in competing, you know, like we wouldn't put two edible groups in there or whatever. So I like those two business models just because I kind of have like my own personal model that I like to run for both those tracks. And again, I'm not day to day. I like to do things that I can like kind of, you know, get in, set up, and then, you know, call me if there's a problem.
Big fan of that.
Yes.
So just for more clarification, in terms of that processing facility, that's your license, but the assets and within those, are they renting from you? What's the business model here for CB Advisors, and maybe long term, where does that take you?
You know, we're not public, we're not big, we're very boutique-y. Our first priority is relationships and really working with people with the same ethics, and every single state has different rules and regulations, and so we have to abide by that. So I wouldn't say we have one business model that we like lay on top of it. For me, I look for opportunity. So I look, you know, in Alabama, I'm like, okay, they only had four processor LOI requests for an application, you know, during the first time that they did the numbers. So I see a void there where they need more than four processors or, you know, more than four applicants. So, you know, I just basically strategically analyze the opportunity and the resources that I have. And that's when I say yes, if I have the right team, the right fit, the right locals, the right capital, And that's like basically takes the most time is really figuring out what those right fits are. Early in my career, I was like, yes, let's do everything. And then obviously that backfires. So now that I'm a little older, a little wiser, I pick my poison, so to speak.
Hear me for a second here. I have this hypothesis. Imagine I want to get a license and I don't have a lot of money. I have some money.
Yep.
Both. Let's imagine two separate situations. One where I am a social equity applicant and one where I'm not. Mm-hmm. Where should I be looking in each case? Like which states are most friendly toward capitalized access to licenses?
So the big opportunity, and I feel like the first social equity program just happened in New York. And that was, in my opinion, has been the best executed thus far in the sense that they are going to have a fund for these people to pull from. The parameters were really high in the sense that, you know, people had to be social equity candidates, but they also had to like have a business. And so I think New York will be like a really, really good example for states to follow moving forward. And then obviously we have, you know, states like Illinois coming up. There's some minority not social equity options in some of the southern states that are popping up. I believe that one of the ballot initiatives is going to allow for more like social equity type programming in Missouri. But we have some blogs up on the cannabisbusinessadvisors.com. If you just search social equity, everything will pop up, all the parameters. And then if you ever have questions, email us to see if you meet the parameters, and we will absolutely do an analysis on it for you and make sure that you're in the right hands, whether you need an attorney or an investor group or an application consultant.
Wonderful. So Sarah, you're pretty familiar with New York then, right?
Yes.
Sounds like.
Yep, we submitted too.
I'm sorry?
We submitted too.
Okay, perfect. So there was an interesting article that came out in Forbes end of last week, I think, from Zone Properties, and it was about the supply chain and how they have that set up in New York and a potential flaw in that system with basically you can only grow a certain amount, I believe, for adult dispensaries. And outside of that, you can go to wholesale and obviously buy from your competitors, but then they have the option to whether or not to sell to you. So inadvertently, the article is claiming that it actually sets up nicely for those who have entered through the medical market through some of these larger corporations and actually is less friendly to those small businesses that it's meant to be friendly toward. I'm curious your reaction to that.
You know, it's politics at this point, right? So like the large MSOs and the people that have been operating in this state, in order to get things passed, they need that lobbying power and that sign-off. So a lot of times they are paying the respect to the people that have been in this state and producing and maybe haven't made a return on their investment yet. Same thing happened in New Jersey, right? Where it's like, you know, the old licensees get to do different things than the new licensees. And we'll see that in the states that are going from medical to recreational. It's that the program changes. You know, and I think bringing states online with like staff legislation, I always say this, it's cumbersome and it always doesn't make perfect sense. But at some point we have to move forward. And if we were waiting for perfection every time, like we wouldn't even have an industry, you know, states wouldn't have legalized.
That was super interesting. And honestly, you know, just to close it up, but you know, looking, if big operators who have medical licenses in New York are smart enough, they will look at California and understand that as supply surges, the buyer also gets a lot more power. What's happening in California a lot right now is a lot of buyers are simply not paying their suppliers after they get the product, then switch to a different provider for 3 months. And then the original supplier gets a little bit desperate that they're losing the business, renegotiate the terms, provide a payment plan. So I am sure that they will be smarter, or hope they're smarter, and reach a balance where it's not just the bigger players taking advantage of the needs of these newer adult use players coming up.
Right. And like prices stabilize. That's what we see happen in all the markets. And, you know, quite frankly, the markets on the East are still priced high. They're newer programs. If you look at our prices here in Arizona, it's actually kind of scary. I mean, our prices are so low right now. So, I mean, at some point, you know, the little guys have to, you know, bind together and figure out a way to work with the big guys. And we see that in every other industry. I mean, we do. There's big corporations and there's, you know, small local people.
Very interesting insights. Sarah Gullickson, thank you so much again for joining us, founder and CEO of the CB Advisors. Really quick, website for you where people can find you.
TheCannabisBusinessAdvisors.com.
Wonderful, wonderful SEO. Yeah, man, you got yourself set up for
super creative that time around, right? Second company, you're like, okay, this works.
Yeah, some searchability in that one. Sarah, thank you again. Really appreciate
your
time.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, Javier, that was super interesting. Interesting conversation about New York that I didn't expect either. An interesting market for sure. And actually, I think PharmaCann, do they have an entrance in New York? Am I making that up?
Let's ask Mr.
I don't think Jeremy. I'm making that up. I don't think I'm making that up. Jeremy Unruh, let's get you over, sir. We have you as the SVP, Public and Regulatory Affairs at PharmaCann. Two clarifying questions, Jeremy. One, Unruh?
Unruh, exactly. Unruh. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Awesome. Fantastic. Two, fun. You're in New York, right?
We are an operator in New York. We have the very first regulated license ever given out by the state of New York. We were the highest scoring applicant in the 2015 application process. That application for us was, if memory serves me, it was 44,000 documents in 22 bankers' boxes in a U-Haul truck that we drove to the Department of Health and dropped off. So.
Absolutely not. I so don't envy you at all.
Environmentally friendly, too.
Yeah, the exact opposite in every way. So, Jeremy, we'll circle back to who you are and a little bit more about PharmaCann, but we're just talking about New York.
Yeah.
So I'd love to get your insights on how the market's rolling out and your initial reaction there.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting critter, as I noted to Javier. You know, it is rolling out in what I think the way that the Office of Cannabis Management and those folks who are the Cannabis Control Board who sits above them and the legislators, the bill sponsors of the MRTA, the adult use law there. I think it's rolling out in the way that they are attempting to intend for it to roll out. They want to very much democratize the industry there. And in the view of the regulators and the we'll call them the kind of the policy stakeholders there in New York, you know, they want it to look like a Washington or an Oregon. I don't think they want it to look like a chaotic California, but I do think that they're trying to prioritize the smaller local social equity, and in their phrase, they use the term justice involved applicant. And, you know, as one of the incumbent medical operators, you know, I've been in that market since literally day one. And so I understand it, because I think we speak PharmaCann, we speak the New York language a little bit better than maybe some of our peers who have come in more recently, you know, kind of splashing in and saying, hey, we're here in New York, let's make this happen. We've learned over the years, over the past 8 years there, that the cadence just tends to be a little slower in that state because it's bigger and there are more diverse and disparate interests that have a voice in that cannabis world in New York. You have the upstate hemp farmers, and you have those folks who are just as involved in the city. And then you have the medical operators and medical patients. And there are a lot of interests that have to be heard and addressed and taken into consideration as the market rolls out.
So you speak New York, and I'm walking over here, but I know you're originally from Illinois, right? PharmaCann originated where?
We did. We are from Illinois, and we started at the same time that several of our peers did, the Chicago, the Illinois-based multi-state operators. You know, we all came to be in 2015 in the Illinois application process, which though there were a few other competitive application processes prior to that, I don't know that there were any that were as big, that were as formidable, and that were as rigorous as the one in Illinois. And that was, of course, where many of us grassroots who merged into Curaleaf, Verano, which at the time was called Ataraxia, Charlie's crew at Cresco and GTI, as well as Pharmacan, all kind of got our start.
You know, and having taken those learnings, then you got into which other markets? Which other markets are you present at
now?
Which other markets are you looking at?
Sure. So the way it worked back then is we all kind of were like, oh my gosh, we just developed all this intellectual property to win these licenses in Illinois, and immediately thereafter, New York had its application process, and then I think it was Maryland, and then it was like Pennsylvania phase one. Pennsylvania phase two, Ohio, and that they all those eastern, more rigidly regulated states kind of just started to go. And we, those of us that had developed those applications, were able to take that intellectual property and apply with some degree of success thereafter. So, you know, our sweet spot has really been, you know, Illinois, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Massachusetts, and New York. And then just this in 2022, we closed a transaction and are in the process of successfully integrating with LiveWell, which gives us 25 or so dispensaries in Colorado, which is arguably the largest cannabis market in the world, perhaps, as well as Michigan, where they have a very, very nice wholesale footprint in that state too.
Is there one market that you wish you were in, just out of curiosity, because it sounds like you're covering all the main ones?
So we do have a few that we are looking for. You know, our strategy is to really deepen and grow in our existing markets and really develop the operations that we have here, as well as kind of cap up in a state like Illinois. We have 8 dispensaries and are permitted to have 10. So we'd love to go find those other 2 dispensaries. In Michigan, you know, we have this great wholesale footprint. Now we'd love to onboard some retail to really maximize that margin opportunity. And in Colorado, we'd like to maximize our footprint to continue to take advantage of that margin opportunity that LiveWell has put together. You know, Florida is always very, very interesting to us. I think Arizona, Nevada are kind of short-term next steps for us once we really feel like we've done what we need to do in our existing marketplace. I'm a competitive application guy, so I can't wait to see what happens in Texas. I'm ready to throw down there.
Yeah, I don't know about you, Javi, but I just heard Pharmacan is looking to acquire Trulieve. But just kidding. Please don't take that out of context, anybody. Don't edit this video. So Jeremy, I mean, we have you here. You're the SVP of Regulatory Affairs at Pharmacan. So you've got to be hyper aware of what's happening on the federal scene.
Yeah.
And you know, how that affects a company as large as Pharmacan. Sure. So, you know, I'll ask you the same question I asked Sarah, but I'd love for you to expand further on what you're looking for the rest of the year. But what's your initial reaction to President Biden finally getting involved in the marijuana industry?
So I think here are my thoughts on that. I think he was delivering on a campaign promise that he, I mean, I don't know if he strategically waited until a month before the election, but, you know, it was a strategic move for him. I know we waited for a long time for him to execute on those campaign promises, but I really think, you know, he did 3 things, right? He pardoned all of the low-level nonviolent sort of cannabis possession federal convictions, right? We know that most of those 6,500 people were not actually being incarcerated at the time, but he pardoned those, and so he will be in the process of essentially reversing or expunging or erasing the convictions that come along with those 6,500 convictions. So that's the first thing he did. The second thing he did, he messaged to the 50 governors. And he said, hey, listen, I'm pardoning all these federal cannabis convictions. You all need to begin to develop processes in your states to address these state level cannabis convictions. And, you know, I spent many years as a prosecuting attorney. In fact, a couple years assigned to the chief judge of the felony criminal courthouse here in Chicago, where a lot of state level expungements are processed. And I'm telling you, this is a volume based operation that requires an infrastructure to really visit and address these. And so he said, hey, governor, start looking into this, right? That's the second thing he did. The third thing he did was he told the Secretary of Health and Human Services, who oversees the FDA and the National Institute for Drug Abuse, and the Attorney General, who oversees the DEA, to begin the process of reevaluating the propriety of cannabis as a Schedule I controlled substance on the Controlled Substances Act of 1970. And that's a very long process. But one of the things in those three things that he did that I think people don't focus on is that second piece to the governor's. Isn't that precisely what the HOPE Act purports to do, which is to give block grants to the states to set up these expungement processes for state-level cannabis convictions? So what I think the president is doing is he's doing everything he can as the administration to at least create the environment in the Congress for these last, 2 months of lame duck session so that they can get a safe banking plus, I don't know, plus HOPE Act, which dovetails very nicely with the second thing he had to say. Like, I think he can't do that, but he can at least create a better environment in Congress for that to happen by taking some of the pressure off of the more social equity and not social equity.
The Cory Bookers of the world.
Cannabis advocates who are really focused on decriminalization and criminal justice reform, which is entirely noble. Don't get me wrong. But what he did is he took some of the pressure off that to create the environment in Congress, I think, for SAFE Plus to get through. I like it.
Love it. Now, I'm going to close it up. We were discussing with Sarah a little bit earlier about pricing and how scary low pricing is in some states. Pricing is pretty scary in Illinois for the opposite reason. I was reading yesterday, a report that said that Illinois is among the states with the highest cannabis prices. Why? And what can be done? I mean, it's definitely good for companies and their profit margins, but not so much for patients.
Yeah. So Illinois is adult use and medical, right? And I think Illinois has the second highest tax rate of any state legal state. I think Washington is in kind of pushing the 40s right now. Illinois is at about 30%. So I think that's why you're seeing prices still fairly high. We have a limit in retail right now. We're waiting for these 185 social equity licenses that have been given out. We're waiting for the state to actually loan or grant some of those operators some money so that they can get up and running and create more, if I said more supply, I just means more access, a bigger pipeline or a bigger garden hose, so to speak, for, and I think that will help a little bit. But it's the taxation. And in fact, I did an interview with one of our local news agencies here who's doing a piece on the taxation in Illinois. And I think that our state decision makers are going to have to understand that while those for probably the last 6 months in Illinois, we've generated more in cannabis taxes than we have in booze taxes. And I think everybody loves that. But I think we're going to have to come to grips with the fact that prices will begin to come down as more dispensaries open their doors and that supply glut then kind of hits the marketplace. I also think that we're going to have to deal with the fact that maybe if there is a different posture at the federal level here in the next year, 2, 3, 4, they're going to have to leave some room for the feds to take a little taste of that. So I think we need to get more nimble about our taxation. And I think that those are the kinds of things that will help modulate prices in the Illinois.
Very interesting. So I actually do have one more question. Sorry, Javi. But I'm the only one that I feel like is talking about this, and which means I may just be crazy. Totally fine to say that. But when I look at the news surrounding every morning, from the legislative side, there's two types of Republicans in cannabis. There are those that are already in office and that are decently friendly to the industry. You have the Dave Joyces, the Brian Masks of the world. Who are on access to cannabis, and also, you know, veterans, you know, cannabis for veterans. And, you know, they're pushing these initiatives forward. And then you have those Republicans that are running for office that are actively opposing cannabis legalization, that are actively opposing anything on the state level. The gubernatorial level is actually very similar. They're supporting that. So you just look at Arkansas. It's a perfect example of Republicans really pushing the opposition there, most likely to win votes, but it has actually affected the amount of people that are looking to vote for cannabis into legalization. It's actually shrunk. So my question to you is, should these Republicans make it into the office? It doesn't seem like anybody is worried, concerned, talking about what that looks like for any other federal legislation in cannabis if nothing gets done this year.
Yeah. So I find the Republican-Democrat dichotomy around cannabis to be fascinating because as a business, it was sort of our gut instinct several years ago to run to the advocates, right? Hey, we're all for legalization or at least liberalization of our cannabis, you know, prohibition. And so you guys are advocates and we want to throw in with you. And how can we, you know, have an engagement to help us convince people in our state capitals or DC to legalize cannabis? And so over the years, though, we have learned that in truth, once cannabis is medical or is legalized, Republicans tend to be a little bit more business friendly, right? That's kind of in keeping with the distinctions between the political parties to begin with. So I think that a lot of Republicans right now are kind of like, we're not sure about weed. Our friends in other states are telling us that there's this tax revenue and there's this harm reduction piece and that there's, you know, that a regulated market is better than an unregulated market, but we're not really sure because we've been indoctrinated over the last several decades to just say no to weed, right? And that's a very hard place to get a politician to commit because they don't really want to do it with their heart and soul. It's when you take those folks to a production facility or to a dispensary and they're like, oh my gosh, there are good jobs with 401ks and with, you know, other benefits like health and that's when they say, you know what, this is business friendly, this is business forward, this is opportunity. And that's really when they kind of get on it, you know, they get behind it. And it's the Dave Joyces of the world that have had that aha moment on the Republican side. And I think it's hopefully it's a matter of time before more of those on the Republican side see the upside and the benefit and stop this notion that an unregulated market is still better than a regulated market, because I don't think anybody really, 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 truly believes that to be the case.
No, not in marijuana and not in hemp. That being said, Javier,
talking about that, I will invite people, go to hightimes.com/weirdos. There's a very interesting, opinion column that where they call specific journalists, their favorite journalists in the space, in the cannabis space. And they asked me to write an article on why legalization means regulation, not do as you please. I rarely tell people, go read my stuff, but this is an opinion piece. And it had to be said. It's not easy to hear. It's not nice to hear. But it is what it is. This is what it really means.
Regardless, a lot yet to happen. And honestly, Jeremy, I'd love to have you back and dissect it a little bit more for us.
Happy to. However I can be helpful to you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mr. Unruh. Really appreciate you being here. SVP of Regulatory Affairs at PharmaCann, the largest private MSO out there. We'll see you soon, sir. All right. Javier, this was a great show. Jeremy's just going to chill with us. That's cool.
I'm a producer now.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
I'm going to play with the console while.
Oh, Lord. All right.
Look, I can do all kinds of weird stuff.
God in heaven. All right, y'all. Well, so Greens Run, thank you so much for tuning in. A kernel looks nice. I haven't heard those words in a while, but I'm glad to hear them. I am glad to hear that, though. I'm a big Akerna fan. They don't have a lot of competition in the public markets, and it's important that they do well for the tech side. So, you know, I think it's – and, I mean, listen, we're real here. We don't pump stocks. That's not what we're here to do. But that being said, Javier, any last words for the audience, my friend, before we call it a day?
Benzinga.com/cannabis for your daily dose of cannabis news. Subscribe to Benzinga's Cannabis Insider to get daily updates on in your email. And make sure to mark your calendars. We're coming back to Miami April 11 and April 12 of 2023 for another edition of the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference. This is our 16th edition. Go to bzcannabis.com to get more details.
We're old. We're getting old over here, Javi, but I like it. We're mature. We're still rocking the best cannabis event in cannabis. Until then, y'all. Until Thursday, Javi. Later, brother.